Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hot stuff.
What's going on, everybody? It's a special edition of the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is Sunday the 18th of March. My brackets are busted. Jesse Pereira, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our
pleasure. My brackets are busted also. They were broken before the tournament started.
You're not the only one. We are without Andy and Luke today. Andy's on special assignment, getting well from having the flu. Luke is also on special assignment today, so we have Jesse here to talk about a very timely and, I think, important topic in sports right now, and that's fantasy baseball drafts. Jesse happens to be the commissioner of the fantasy baseball league that I probably spend the most time in. Jesse, you want to give us a little breakdown, the history of the league that we're going to be kind of discussing today?
Yeah. So basically this league started, I guess this is our third year now, and it started with myself and Evan Moffitt in a different league, and that league dissolved, and Evan and I enjoyed it and got our friends in another league, and here we are. Owen is one of those people that joined us up, one of the original members, so pretty much have all of our original members, except we did lose the 2010 champion, but he was kind of a ghost anyway.
We have a 10-team league. It is a head-to-head league. For you fantasy nerds, you know what that means. It means that each player plays against another player each week for a total number of points. You get points for things like 4 points for a home run, 1 point for a single, 1 point for a run, 3 points for a triple. How many points for a win?
10 points for a win. So basically it's CBS. That's how CBS runs their fantasy, where there's just, you assign points for accomplishments that a player can do in a game. So some of them are a little obscure, but for the most part, they're pretty standard stats.
Sure. And this is the third year that we've had the current league intact. The league is called Trash Talkers Unanimous Fantasy Baseball. We have two divisions. What are the two divisions?
Buck Nasty and Silky Johnson.
Silky Johnston and
which is a old Chappelle show
homage
skit,
to the player haters ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That was I love that show and that sketch. So last night was our draft, and I feel like and it's the next day now, so Jesse really wanted to wait until after the draft to be on for our podcast. He didn't want to give away any of his trade secrets.
Can't show my hand.
I'm gonna say this, kind of leading up to this. One of the reasons why I wanted to have Jesse on out of our league, he does some of the most extensive pregame research. He has kind of his own little system that he uses. I'll let him describe it or not. Maybe he wants to keep it a trade secret. I'll let him describe it to everybody. But we had our draft last night, and 2 years ago we had the draft, and everybody was actually there. Last year there were a few fewer people there. This year there were 5 people in the same place, and then the other 5 were, or 6 people in the same place, and the other 4 were out and about. One thing that I noticed yesterday, and you can tell me how you feel about this, I feel like more and more people are more and more prepared every year.
Being
the third year, I felt like last night there were guys who were so in tune with random sleepers that they're picking the sleepers almost too early.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I think a couple guys went early. One that we talked about was Brandon Morrow, went extremely early. Based on just he's been extremely inconsistent, and to take him as high as he went, I don't know what round he went in, but it felt very early in the tournament or in the draft. So, but I agree with you. People are definitely more prepared. They're showing up with their laptops. They have their system. They've got their spreadsheets. They're they're all over it.
And everybody's got a kind of a different system now. I feel like some people are going for very unique strategies. Before we get too far into the draft, is baseball your main kind of fantasy sport that you play? Are you kind of a fantasy nerd all year round? What's the situation there?
Yeah, my wife would kill me if I played any other fantasy sport. I've played in fantasy basketball before. I've never done fantasy football. But I put so much time into... I put so much time into baseball that, you know, and that's 3/4 of the year. You know, baseball season is pretty long. So if I was to put in a full time year round fantasy sports, I would be single. So
and you're the commissioner of just one league. It's our league.
Yeah, yeah.
That's and right. And so tell me a little bit about what it takes extra time wise. Versus somebody like me who just kind of plays in the league. What does it take to be the commissioner of the league as far as time?
It's really not. It's not that bad. I mean, it depends on... There's different styles. Like, I'm pretty hands-on, and I like to know what's going on and be prepared for every contingency. So, like, the league that we have, for example, is a keeper league, where you keep two hitters and two pitchers. And I found that rather than... And you can keep those players for 3 years total, basically, before they would need to enter a draft.
It's kind of a unique system. I mean, you know, there's no kind of standard for a lot of the keeper leagues. Some of them you keep everybody. Some of them you keep half. Yeah.
And there's different time periods that you can keep them. But basically with ours, since there's a three-year, the idea is that players can get put back in. You know, Pujols this year will be either traded or he's up there. You know, he could be in the draft next year, which is next year will be exciting for that reason. But rather than go back and through all of the drafts from the previous years, I do something like I put together a spreadsheet and I have all the players in it, so I know who's the keepers and who's not. And, you know, once you do that, once you initially invest that time, it's no time at all. So, and we're pretty mellow. There's not a lot of stuff that comes up in the season that needs to be solved by a commissioner. So,
like maybe when people start stashing DL players who aren't in the DL anymore and they have to give them up.
Interesting that you bring that up. You mean that's not okay?
Who would do something like that? And it's funny, you know, one of the players, and I speak of myself, of course, last year I wasn't sure. I was on the road. My mind wasn't in it. Anyway, I had Jamel Weeks on my team, and I was trying to keep him on my team and wait for somebody else to get hurt so I could actually take somebody else off the DL. Jesse obviously has been coveting Jamel Weeks since probably before then, because he drafted Jamel Weeks this year and says that he'll be the better Weeks, second baseman. Better. You think he'll put up more numbers than Ricky this year?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Ricky's got such a history of injury, so Jamel seems already to be less fragile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Talk a little bit more specifically. Who were some of those guys yesterday, in your opinion? And I know Hosmer's one, who went a little bit too early in the draft for your liking.
I don't know. I mean, I'm as a fellow drafter, it was disappointing to me that they went, but I don't think that they necessarily went too early. You know, Brett Laurie went really early, but you know, I like Brett Laurie more than I like Kevin Youkilis. So why not take Brett Laurie that early and get it out of the way and get the player that you prefer? Right, right. Brandon Morrow, Brett Laurie. Who else was, I'm trying to think who else went.
Hosmer, Morrow.
Morrow.
I know there. You took D. Gordon, and somebody else was really mad at you about that. Was it Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin wanted D. Gordon.
Kevin was also slightly inebriated. We'll talk about that later on too. So one thing that I really do enjoy as far as being there is you can see the other guy's reaction when you pick your guy, and I think. For me, when I'm drafting, you talked about if he's your guy, right? If there's a guy who's your guy, why not pick him earlier? You liked that third baseman from Toronto more than you liked Kevin Youkilis. So, despite whatever the numbers say online, so I find myself like looking at these numbers online, projections from this year, and what happened from last year, and I'm going off these things as if they're actually going to happen. And from time to time, I need to kind of shake myself a little bit and say these guys are smart. Whoever's predicting what they're predicting, they're not far off probably. I mean, they're getting closer and closer every year, I feel like, with those predictions. I remember 10 years ago when I started playing fantasy baseball, you could get a random guy who nobody thought, and you thought you were smarter than everybody else, but it was just kind of because the formula was too rudimentary and simple. Nowadays, the formulas that everybody has access to are much more strong. That being said, if you like a guy, you take that guy. who was one that I took? I'm trying to think. Jason Wirth I took probably earlier than I would have taken him earlier than people think. He's kind of undervalued this year. People didn't like him last year because he signed his big contract and isn't underperformed last year. His contract underperformed what people thought he would do. But if he's your guy, you got to take him. And just because they predict that he'll have a crappy season doesn't necessarily mean he'll have that crappy season. And I think that's a fun thing about fantasy that you always have to like shake yourself. That's why you do it. That's the fun part of it, I think.
Yeah, it's the unpredictability of it and people liking trying to predict. it seems predictable, but it's really unpredictable. So people basically, it's a competition to see who's who's better at predicting the unpredictable. Right. And you know, one of the things that I see when we, like especially in this league now where we've had all these people in the same league for 3 years now where we've drafted against each other. You know, there's guys that I know are going to be on a team. For example, Craig of the team Foreplay. Before the draft started, I could have told you he's going to have Annabelle Sanchez and
Annabelle or Gabby?
Both Sanchez's, the Sanchez twins. He's going to have Annabelle and he's going to have Gabby on his team. It's a foregone conclusion. Those are guys that he goes after every year, and he does it because they're good value picks. You know, you can wait a long time for Gabby.
Right.
Same with Annabelle.
Right. Sure. And you know that Rocky probably is going to try to pick up a random angel here and there potentially.
Yeah. I knew Rocky was going to go after James Shields. I didn't think he was going to do it for his first pick, but James Shields was on Rocky's team.
So speaking of Rocky, and Rocky's one of our players in our league. He's somebody that I've known since I was probably 6 or 7. Went to school with him and his brother throughout elementary school. Rocky came out with a very unique draft strategy last year. He had his brother drafting for him because he had to work, but what he drafted was he drafted a lot of starting pitchers very early. A lot of us start to fill in our position players early on in the draft and kind of get a pitcher whenever it's kind of okay, fine, I have to get a pitcher now. I've picked three infielders in a row. Okay, fine, I'll get a pitcher. Rocky went out and said, position players be damned, almost. I'm going to pick some pitchers. And he picked three or four pitchers last year in early rounds, and everybody kind of scratched their head and went on to have career seasons for three or four of those pitchers, and won the league as you point out only by how many points?
2.42 points.
And you had who on the bench in the final? I'm just going to give you the chance to get it out there.
Yeah, I played Rocky in the final, and it came down to 2.42 points, and that 2.42 points would have been made up by Carlos Santana and his 50-point week.
You left Santana on the bench.
I put on the bench for the finals because I don't know why. I'm a tinkerer, and I tinkered myself out of a championship.
Indeed.
That's my strategy. Rocky's he drafts pitchers, I tinker.
Right. And so Rocky's strategy last year worked really well. And so one of the things coming into yesterday's draft that I think we were all kind of wondering about, is this same strategy going to happen? Are other people going to try to copycat this strategy? And we saw kind of a little bit more balanced draft yesterday, I think, than last year. It wasn't such a shock that somebody was taking all pitchers. Rocky still took a lot of pitchers early, I think. That was again, a strategy. It wasn't as pronounced as last year.
Well, I think that it actually was as pronounced as last year, but it happened so early that nobody noticed it. In the first round, with basically two hitters per team of the best hitters in the league, so the 20 best hitters off of the board, the fact that me with the 9 pick, that I was able to get Evan Longoria, who is potentially, you know, that's a keeper level third baseman, and third is not an easy position to fill. That he fell to me because people took pitchers early, and so that first two rounds, all the top pitchers came off the board.
I always say in the draft, and my team mirrors the Dodgers in that they're good enough to not be the worst team in the league, but they're and to kind of act like they can contend sometimes, but they're never bad enough to get the first pick, and so they're mired in this kind of Dodger. What's a NBA team like that? Kind of like the Nuggets, I guess. This kind of middle ground. I always say in a draft, you want to be either picking towards the beginning or towards the end in a snake draft, because you, when you get the 10th pick, you also have the 11th pick. When you get the 9th pick, you also have the 12th pick. And so being able to and the decision's kind of made for you in the first round at some level. You're like, well, gosh, Evan Longoria is still on the board. When I drafted, I had Carlos Santana on the board. That's who I had to take at number 6. I felt like it was going to be a big differential between him and probably 7 out of the 9 other catchers. I'm going to have a really big advantage, I think. That's my prediction. Like you said, it's kind of what the game is, right? It's how well are you predicting? So this year we did have the pitchers, but there was another, we did have pitchers go early, and one of those pitchers was, who went in the first round? Was it Shields?
Greinke, and then
Lester.
Yeah. And then, Rocky with the 10 and 11 picks took Shields and CJ Wilson.
So he did have pitchers.
Yeah, so I mean, that, with two keepers, yeah, he had 4 pitchers, yeah, and there's only 6 starting pitcher spots. So he had basically filled his rotation was complete.
Which is why I love having that last pick or that first pick, I just got to say. Because you can just, bam, you can just like fill some needs and then figure out what's coming 20 guys later.
Well, yes and no. But when you're in the middle, you only have, everybody else only has 1 pick.
Right.
So it's easier to predict what's going to happen. With me down at the end, I don't like being at the end. Me being down at the end, it was much harder for me. You know, if I waited on a guy like,
sure,
Morrow,
yeah,
he's gone. Same with Hosmer. So, and maybe those are guys I get if I'm in the middle. So,
right. So, we had another strategy that came into play, and that is the strategy of
accidental strategy.
Yeah, that's the strategy. Doug Ng, who is actually somebody who guest writes on Fansmanship sometimes, joined our league this year. It happened to conflict with some, our draft happened to conflict with some previously scheduled things. And so Doug had auto draft turned on, and I don't think he did any pre-ranking. So basically it went by the CBS sports rankings, and I guess we'll see how good those rankings really are. As humans, we have a tendency to pick guys who we like rather than guys who might produce. So I'm really interested to see how good those rankings really turn out. He got a lot of guys who nobody really loves, like Melky Cabrera, but who's owned by over 90% of the leagues and who is going to get a lot of playing time and who has potential to put up big numbers this year. But Doug's,
I found it interesting with his accidental strategy, in that basically, since all of us, we undervalue closers and relievers. And he, because of that, he went after took all the best hitters.
Best players on the board. Okay, that's what the computer took, and most points predicted,
and it always favors
any player
hitters.
Left, and it favors hitters at the beginning, and then towards the end it favors relief pitchers. So of Doug's 10 or 12, 13 starters, what do you have? A corner infielder, middle infielder, and a util. So 12, 11, 11 starters hitting wise. All 11, I think, had at least 90% owned in fantasy in CBS.
Yeah, his worst hitter according to the CBS rankings is Dustin Ackley, who's
the second baseman for the Mariners, right?
Potentially, he has a lot of upside. He's an upside pick.
And a lot of those guys who everybody who was actually physically drafting didn't have high up as CBS did because of the fact that it was upside, not proven. Doug got a lot of those guys. So I'm really interested to see, A, how a lot of those guys do, the Melky Cabreras of the world, the Ackleys. There were a couple others. I also am really interested to see, because in our league, the rule about pitchers is that you have six total pitchers.
7 total pitchers.
One of them has to be a relief pitcher. The rest can be either relievers or starters. What Doug did was he drafted, I think, 7 or 8 closers and starting closers and good closers. He has a number of relief pitchers, and this does 2 things. Number one, this strategy allows him to have a chance to get points from his pitchers every single night. Relief pitchers don't often have negative points. They definitely don't often get, you know, a lot of losses. I think probably my starting pitchers will get more losses than his relief pitchers will.
Well, as long as he has elite relief pitchers, so yeah, in theory, he's going to be in good shape as far as getting losses, but.
Right. And so along with having the ability to get points every night, he doesn't have the ability to get like the 40 or 50 point start like I have with Felix Hernandez or you have with I don't know who's on your team.
Kershaw.
Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Fantastic. So Felix the Cat or Clayton could get 40 or 50 points on any given night. But I think the interesting thing is that he can get 15 points every three nights out of the week from a closer, three or four games a week in a week, and he can get 40 points in a week from a closer. I did it with Heath Bell a couple of years ago. Especially if you have a closer who has a really good week, you're right there. And since you have all closers, you know, anything could happen on any night. Comebacks.
I think his team is going to be very, for him, it'll be stressful. For outsiders, it'll be exciting.
Very interesting.
You know, it'll be interesting to see. And I think he's going to win a lot of come from behind.
Yeah.
Looks like Doug's done. And then, you know, JJ Putz is going to go out and get a 3K shut down the side save and put up 15 on the last day to win.
Here's the other thing I was thinking about, Jesse, and I think it's worth thinking about noting. I have the Angels closer. His name is, I don't even know.
Jordan Walden.
Yeah, Jordan Walden Pond.
Yes, on Walden's Pond, yes.
I almost called my team that, and we'll talk about my team names in a second.
We're glad that you didn't.
Yeah. So Jordan Walden is my closer, but usually everybody has one or maybe two closers. So you're talking about a team, you know, 10 teams in the league. There are, you know, 20 something closers that are solid, that are out there, that are getting closer time, that are the established closer for their team, right? That are available. Now there's only maybe 10 closers left who are maybe less, who are really stable. And so if Jordan Walden, who I kind of took a flyer on as my closer, I think the Angels are going to be really good. I think if he has a year close to last year, he could get 40 saves. I think, if Walden doesn't produce, my options are now more limited because of what Doug did. He made the supply a lot lower, and so the price on those guys is going to go up. He could get he could trade sometime in the year for a starting pitcher, for somebody who lost a relief pitcher and needs somebody. He has some options because of that too, I think.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. And you know, closers, one of the reasons closers get drafted later in drafts is, you know, they're unpredictable. JJ Putz is starting out the season as the closer. He may not be the closer in a month. All he has to have is really one bad week, and he could easily be supplanted by a young up-and-comer, which what probably will happen with the Dodgers and Javi Guerra.
Yeah, Kenley's right there, which is why neither of them got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there aren't that many very stable closing jobs. I mean, there's Kimbrel in Atlanta, although he's only in his second year, so he could easily get hit.
You know, there's a lot of people that said Venters should be the closer going into last season before Kimbrel saved 46. So he could be supplanted this year by Venters.
There's a lot of teams with that kind of second guy. I know, like, the A's closing job was in jeopardy. You know, there's two or three guys vying for it. There's a lot of closers that always move around because people feel like it's a fillable position. There's always another guy who can throw 95 and who has really good stuff and can come out for an inning and get guys out, or who they think can. Kind of an interesting position there. And I will be interested to see how Doug fares in our league, because he did get such great hitters and now he has a lot of relief pitchers. We'll see if that can make up for the lack of being able to get, you know, a 40 point game some nights, or getting, you know, 20 to 25 points from a starter. Cause some weeks your closer's team sucks. when I had Heath Bell, did I have him last year? I might have. When the Padres were really bad, he doesn't get any saves anymore. And so what do you do then? You just have to deal with it. And he might get an inning or two, but, you know, maybe not a save, maybe just kind of a pitch in a game that they lose or something.
It's totally unpredictable.
Right.
I mean, Kimbrel, I picked him up as a free agent last year. So, and he was one of my best pitchers. Right. So you just never know what you're going to get.
Tell me about some of these names. What's kind of the thing that comes to mind for you when you hear a few of these names? And a few of them we've already mentioned, and you've talked about some like, oh, man, I wish I would have got that guy. But Brandon Morrow.
I've been waiting on Brandon Morrow now for 3 years, and I was disappointed not to get him this year because I felt like I've stuck through the hard times with the guy. But, you know, I think Seattle set his career back because they jerked him around and put him in the bullpen. Okay. Oh, he's a starter now. And they moved him to Toronto, and I think Toronto's done it right. He was starting to come on strong at the end of the season 2 years ago, and then they shut him down with an innings cap. And then I think they did that again this year too, or last year. And he's got the stuff. He strikes a lot of guys out, but when he gives up contact, he gives up hard contact, and that's been his problem. He also is not very good at keeping runners once they get on base. He's not good at keeping them from crossing the plate. So, you know, everybody predicted him as having a breakout year last year and didn't happen. ERA near 5 and, you know, still a lot of strikeouts, but... So, you know, everybody's saying he was kind of a deep sleeper this year because everybody... Usually when a breakout's predicted to happen and it doesn't happen, people wait on him. But Andy jumped on him, got him early.
Got him early and made it happen, huh?
Yeah, but he's all set up. He's going to go over 200 innings. And when you go over 200 innings and you have the strikeout potential he does, he's very likely to be able to strike out 220 guys this year.
I think about Morrow kind of like I think about Tommy Hansen, who I drafted, where there's some strikeout potential. You're not really sure. I mean, Hansen because of injury, Morrow because of... Just he's been inconsistent, and some of those second level measurables are not always there. But I think about them as kind of a similar risk that way. Tell me about Michael Kadire. What do you think about Michael Kadire? He's a guy that I drafted, and I'll tell you what I think about him. I'm a big
Kadire fan.
I'm a huge Kadire fan. I drafted him. This is the third year in a row now. I remember the first year you made some comment like, oh God, I had Michael Kadire on my team last year and he was horrible. He was such a disappointment, blah, blah, blah.
I think that might have been Stevens.
Is that Stevens or Evan maybe?
Yeah. I've never drafted Kadire.
Well, anyway, so...
I don't mean that negatively.
No.
He's just never been on my team.
He's a guy who flies under the radar because he doesn't hit a ton of jacks. He
does everything.
He plays
mediocre.
Second base, first base. He had, I think, 400 and something points last year. And as a middle round pick, I don't see how I could go wrong. Is this the year that he actually like starts to taper off for real because he's playing outfield every day? Or is it the year that because he's playing in Coors Field, all of a sudden, things start to get a lot better for him even? He takes that next step.
He's got a few years left before he starts tapering off, but moving to Coors Field, I think his numbers are going to bump up this year. So, yeah, you got a good value pick there. I'm not disputing that at all. There's just some guys you shy away from, and I've always shied away from him.
And hitting behind Cargo and
he's gonna have a good
Casey
year.
Blake's on that team now. Yeah,
yeah.
Not that he's gonna maybe his. I think he's a similar player that like is a second like a fifth level third baseman. If your third baseman gets hurt and you're in the late season or middle season, and he's having a good week,
I don't think Casey Blake will be playing after by June 1st. It won't be Casey Blake.
Be hurt.
He's already banged up.
Is he?
But
yeah.
His career is, you know, he's winding down a decent major league career and. Yeah.
The Dodgers did a good job getting rid of him, I think, at the time.
The Rockies have a top-level third base prospect in the wings.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to see. I think it's Nolan. I know how to spell it, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
Spell it for me. Go.
A-R-E-N-A-D-O. Arenado.
Arenado.
Yeah, something like that.
Nolan Arenado. Okay.
So they'll see him this year, and I think he actually could be an impact player that comes up in midseason.
I have a question for Dodger fans. Would you rather have Casey Blake on the Rockies or Carlos Santana on the Dodgers? Who's the Dodgers catcher?
Who's the Dodgers catcher?
Did they re-sign Barajas even? I don't think they did they? Or did they?
No, I think he's still there.
Okay. To play part-time, him and Ellis?
Something like that.
Oh, my God. Speaking of the Dodgers, okay, two questions. D. Gordon, I know you traded him to me today. Jesse and I executed a trade today that'll hopefully go through. Jesse traded me D. Gordon and Daniel Murphy from the Mets together for Elvis Andrus. Elvis has been on my team the last 2 years. He's been as solid a player as I could have, but I finished in like fourth place and sixth place the last 2 years. I can't have another mediocre finish. Not that Elvis is a mediocre player, but I feel like having Murphy and having D. Gordon, if D. Gordon has a breakout year and gets anywhere close to Elvis, he's with Eric Ibar on my team. Those are two good shortstops, one to play shortstop, one to play middle infield. And Daniel Murphy then can fill in at either of the corner infield positions or second base or middle infield. And so having that versatility, because my guys always get hurt. God dang it. I draft old guys sometimes and they get hurt. So I like that versatility. I think Daniel Murphy is ready to have a breakout year at second base if he doesn't get his leg broken again or his knee sprained again or whatever happened to him last year. I'm looking for the Mets to have a better year than people think too. Tell me about what you think about D, but back to the question, D. Gordon, is he actually, did you fleece me on that trade now that it's done?
No, I think it filled a need. I mean, you needed a second. Who was your second baseman? You needed a second baseman, didn't you?
Who is my second baseman?
Well, there you go. See, you needed it. If you don't know who your second baseman is,
I don't know that I needed one. I think I had a good one. Let me see what's happening here.
Did I fleece you on it? I don't know. I'm extremely happy.
You hope so.
I'm extremely happy with it. I hope it works out for you. And as long as I'm not. Oh, yeah. Well,
and Zobrist is inconsistent, too.
But he can play outfield, too.
Right. So, again, a lot of flexibility in my roster if somebody starts really sucking.
Yeah. And if people get hurt.
Which happens. Both things happen to me. The other thing is that Elvis did get hurt for some time last year. He's been generally durable. Generally, he puts up a lot of points, but he has been hurt. He's hurt a lot of different weeks randomly, and he sits out games randomly sometimes. And so that's the other reason. I hope D. Gordon will be like, because he's young, he'll play a lot of games. He'll get a lot of weeks where he steals, you know, 10 bases in a week or something. And that's my hope anyway.
Yeah, and I like D. Gordon, and I wasn't unhappy with that pick, but I felt like I was forced into Daniel Murphy, and he's not a player that really excites me very much. So
I wanted Daniel Murphy.
Yeah, it was actually the easiest trade I've ever made. There wasn't really any argument. I offered it kind of jokingly last night.
I think
yes.
I offered it.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. There you go.
I said, "Who's your shortstop?" And you said D. Gordon, and I said, "Okay, Elvis for D." And I got to say, I picked up Daniel Murphy last year off the waiver wire, and he carried my team to 2 or 3 weeks in a row where we won before he got hurt. One of my top three performers offensively. And so, because of that experience, I think I'm really hoping that he can perform. Somebody else who I'm really hoping can perform and who I did name my fantasy team after this year, his name's Lucas Duda. Oh, Duda Day. So, Lucas,
that's a good one too.
Yeah. That would have been a great name too. Lucas Duda, tell me about, what you think about him.
Well,
just because you tend to know more than me, and I drafted him. So.
Well, actually, he was one of my targets. He's just one of those undervalued players. He's one of those undervalued players that slips past people, and you can get him in the later rounds. But just in general, I like all of the Mets this year because they moved in the fences at Citi Field. So
it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's, you know, just pretty much bump a couple more home runs on everybody's score.
In a close game, a home run during the week can
is
really...
Is that Citi Field?
Citi Field, yeah. It's way better than Shea Stadium. I'll put in a plug here. During our East Coast baseball road trip that I'm writing, currently the first part of the four-part series is out on fansmanship.com. Check it out. We did visit the old Shea Stadium, and that was the worst stadium I think I've ever been in. Every single lower-level seat has a box, and I'm using big air quotes, because there's a bar digging into your ribs no matter where you're sitting, and it's just high enough so that you can't comfortably put your arm on it, and it's just low enough that you can't get your shoulder under it. And so it's like the most annoying thing to have next to you, and they're everywhere, so you can't like walk down a row. Maybe it's a security thing, I don't know. It might be just a remnant of
sounds like bad architecture.
Yeah, and it's just horrible. I can't say how bad it was enough. But anyway, one more player that I'm interested in this year that I drafted that I want your take on. And you don't have to give your take on any of your players because I know you like them. Austin Jackson, you know, he's in Detroit. He's playing center field. He showed a little bit of pop at the end of last year. He's hitting now ahead of Prince Fielder and hitting ahead of Miguel Cabrera. Probably or directly behind him, whatever, in the same lineup as.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What does that mean for Austin Jackson? I think he has big upside. That's why I picked him. And
he absolutely
he's on my bench to start.
He absolutely has big upside. The big problem with Austin Jackson is, can he convert some of his strikeouts into walks? He needs to get his on-base percentage up over 350. I think it was in the 330 range last year. Strikes out 25% of the time. That's got to go down.
My outfielders are going to be kind of strikeout kings. I got Kemp. I got Marquez.
Strikeouts are bad because they are negative points.
A whole point.
Yeah.
A whole point. So that's never a good thing.
That's why Mark Reynolds is undrafted.
So I asked you about...
And Adam Dunn.
Oh, maybe. Well,
he strikes out too much. Go pick him up.
Yeah. But the interesting thing about our league too is that there's three bench spots. So it's not like you have this huge deep bench that you can just stash guys on, which is important, I think, if you're going to have a good league. You don't want too many bench spots. So Lucas Duda, I mentioned, my team name this year is the Duda Abides. And I have a big picture of the dude. The previous 2 years, I had the Ricky Weeks All-Stars the first year with an awesome picture of Ricky Weeks from like minor league days. And it was stretched out a little bit weird,
I think,
too.
Last year you hit your stride with team names.
I picked in the last round last year. And actually, he was a decent last final round sleeper last year.
He ran out of gas in the second half.
He did. And that's one of the reasons my team did, too, because I was kind of depending on him to be a horse, is Jolys Chacín. For the Rockies, he had a good start to the year, and he just had a bunch of bad starts in a row.
Let's say that team name. What was that?
Orange Jolys. And I had a picture of him from the minor leagues.
A great picture of him.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Looking over his shoulder with those come hither eyes.
It's kind of naughty.
It was actually kind of an awkward picture.
But one of the things that happens when I name my team like that, and I hope nobody, well, I do hope people from the league are listening. I feel like they do get drafted earlier the following year. It's happened twice now, I think. I think Ricky Weeks got drafted earlier than he should have, or earlier than I would have taken him. And I did take him early the first year, and you guys all looked at me like I was crazy, and he had one of the best years of his
career. I don't
want
to debunk your theory, but he was taken by Mark, who was a new player in the league last year.
Yeah, but I was still called Ricky
Weeks
All-Stars.
You were talking about him, yeah.
And I was still called Orange Jolys.
I guess that's possible. Okay. It's definitely a plausible theory.
Really? Chacín got picked by Mark?
No. Ricky Weeks last year.
Oh, Ricky Weeks did.
Last year when you...
Yeah, but
there was a big article on the front of the page about, or on the front of the homepage for the site about the change of the name. And
Right. And so, the idea is that... that I think I put a little additional value on those guys, and that's one of the reasons why I don't get them the next year, because I know who they really are. Maybe they over. I always pick a guy who outperforms what I think he's going to do and what I think he actually is, and so I'm like, okay, I'll pick him this year, but maybe not that high. And then somebody else, takes a flyer on him a little early to have him repeat that year. And Ricky certainly did not repeat that year last year and isn't projected to do anything like that this year. Jolys, I think, is a work in progress. I think he could win 18 games. I don't think he has the mental stuff for it. He's kind of like Chad Billingsley.
I think 14 games he's kinda is like probably Billingsley. a better estimate of his plus this year.
Chacín is Colorado's Billingsley and will be for years. Not a bad thing. I mean, he's a decent pitcher, but
I think he has he has
Billingsley.
If he steps
stuff,
forward this year, then he won't be Chad Billingsley. But I see where you're coming from with that.
If Chad Billingsley steps up this year, he won't be Chad Billingsley. And all the Dodger fans are hoping for that. Wow. So we've gone through a lot of stuff here. One thing that happens when you're all at a draft together is that there are
shenanigans.
Oh, God, shenanigans do occur. Before we talk about the shenanigans, how busted are your brackets, really?
Really
like,
busted.
Do you have more than half the games so far picked correctly?
I don't believe I do anymore. I was looking good, I think, Friday afternoon, but the weekend destroyed me. I might check it this evening.
I think
I'm
had
depressed.
San Diego State in the Elite Eight. Some other team that lost. I had Duke in the Elite Eight. I mean, everybody did that, but I had a couple of these teams that I was really hoping for the upset that didn't, and every single team that upset, I picked the chalk on. So, not the right choice. But getting back to the shenanigans, so after having the draft at my house last year, we had the draft at Kevin's house this year.
On St. Paddy's Day.
No green beer, but there was beer to be had. And cookies. Everybody liked my cookies.
Your cookies were totally demolished.
And Kevin did make some awesome cheese stuffed chili peppers. And what else did he make? Some other
pulled pork sandwiches.
Cheese stuffed and bacon wrapped chili peppers.
Yep.
And some pulled pork sandwiches that had a little kick to them. But then he was at home. And when you're at home and you don't have to drive home, you start getting after it a little bit. And by about the second round of the draft, Kevin was well lubed. Among others.
He was having a good time.
I hate to name names, but there was some definite shenanigans, and it's always fun. When one of my favorite things about this league is that we all draft together.
Try to.
Next year I think we need to make it like, and we always try to, but next year I'd like to see more guys there than six. I think we need to have 9 or 10 would be my preference. Because you get to see the other guys' reactions. It's like, do we have five?
It was five. Yeah.
Me,
it
you,
was
Evan.
Dova, Q, Evan, yourself, and me.
Okay, fine. Dang.
I know. Five is
Steve,
kind of
yeah,
kind
Andy
of a
was
bummer.
Supposed to be there, but he was sick. Blah, blah, blah. But one of the things I love seeing is the other guy's reaction when I pick somebody. Because I love to see that my pick, not only I like my pick of Jason Wirth in like the 15th round, but also that Dova and Kevin were really mad about it when they heard it. And Evan too. So you're like, dang, that was a good pick then. Or I pick like Ricky Weeks the first year and you guys are like, what? And then I could talk crap about it later in the year because he was like my second best player that year.
Yeah.
So that's one of the fun things that I think I think you lose something just doing this online draft where nobody's actually there.
Oh, yeah. And I think at least all, you know, I think Andy will be there. You can pretty much count on at least six of us being there pretty much every year. So, and that's why we put it out there. Why are we having the draft? Because you don't, the chat board's nice and it's fun to even, you know, even in the same room, we use the chat board to talk a little bit of smack to each other. But it really just can't make up for the amount of smack talking that goes on in the room.
Yeah, or when somebody's wife gets on because they're a little too inebriated.
Yes, and speaks for
them.
Make some confessions.
These are the things that go into fantasy baseball. All right.
The great thing is the transcript from the chat board stays with the league as long as we have the league in the league history. So you can always go back and relive that draft.
There are some of those lines that I would rather have deleted forever, probably. I think from the first year, the line that I would want deleted is Owen's team chooses Grady Sizemore.
Oh,
yeah. What happened to that guy? Is he even still playing?
He's trying. He's hurt again.
Man, that guy was an incredible athlete. He was the best. He was top three athletes in baseball. He could hit. He could run.
Yeah,
he could field. He would get on web gems every night.
Just continually hurt. They gave him a 1-year deal, and he hurt again.
And they really liked him too. They gave him a lot of money for a couple years.
He's local, isn't he? Is he from Cleveland?
No, he's from the Midwest. I want to say.
Yeah.
He's been super loyal to the Indians. Yeah, man. That's a guy I would like to see have at least one or two more good years in the majors and. Yeah,
kind of like, you know, Rocco Baldelli comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah, Rocco had that genetic disorder, I think.
Right.
Yeah. And he was I wrote about it in the article about our baseball trip, where Rocco was the Devil Rays that year. And they were still called the Devil Rays, but it was Rocco, Carl Crawford was brand new, BJ Upton was playing shortstop at the time. You know, there were some definite Aubrey Huff was there. You know, they weren't this kind of horrible team. They had some names, but they weren't very good.
They weren't very good until they dropped the devil from their names.
I'm going to encourage you all to check out my article on that. I just, you know, again, I'm going to drop a please and thank you. Go ahead and read that article. It's called The Baseball Road Trip You've Always Wanted to Take. And part one is published now. I think part two will be out next week. Fansmanship.com. Me, namely, is going to spring training this week. I will be in Glendale and Surprise. I'm going to see the Dodgers a couple times because we are mostly Dodger fans-ish. Luke likes the Angels. And I'll be there probably blogging a little bit, probably doing some kind of writing on Friday and Saturday. And we'll probably be back with a podcast in a few weeks here. Thanks for listening to our Fantasy Baseball podcast. If you want more information on anything that we do, you can go to www.fansmanship.com. Jesse, thanks for being our commissioner. And I'll invite people, if you want to join a fansmanship.com fantasy league, because we do have like free Yahoo leagues for people through Fansmanship. If you want to join us and play against the dudes from Fansmanship, please shoot me an email, owen@fansmanship.com, and you're more than welcome to join one of our leagues. Again, Jesse, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure, and we'll catch you next time here on fansmanship.com podcast.
Have you guys has ever wanted to be up in the stars, looking down from the moon? Well, that's where I am right now. I'm up in the stars. I'm in the moon. I'm somewhere where no one's ever been before besides the astronauts. I'm here. You're down there.